Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Saraya's tag team partner has finally been unveiled. It is. Is the sound coming through? Yes,
oh, yeah,
it is.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Saraya, that's good because you gave it more of a build. Because we've had, 6 weeks of build for this? The mystery tag partner of Saraya against Britt Baker and Toni Storm.
And Jamie Hayter.
And Jamie Hayter. Sorry, I've given away the reveal. There's plenty of free agents out there. Toni Storm. Who could it be? It's Toni Storm. I'm Ollie Davis. I'm joined by Luke Owen, DAD. Welcome to the AEW Dynamite new look. Well, not new look for us, but a new look for Dynamite. Review, please, if you haven't already, press the subscribe button. Give us a thumbs up. Leave a comment down below with what you thought of the show and send in those wonderful Omega chats because we'll read out every single one over $5 to wrestletalk.com/support.
Indeed, yeah. So we're going to be reviewing AEW Dynamite today, but we thought we would talk about the news at hand, if you will, because we've been building to this for quite a while, as you were setting up at the start. Last year, Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter challenged Saraya to a tag match.
This was it November?
I think it was in November,
it was like late November.
And then Saraya was like, I will find myself a tag partner. So it's just been mystery partner. Mm-hmm. And the rumor mill has been spinning. It's going to be Sasha Banks / Mercedes Moné, as she is now known. There was even, hey, it could be Mandy Rose after she was released from WWE. But more likely, it was going to be Mercedes Moné. And they announced on last night's show, it's Toni Storm. However, I'll get the news up. Bear with me 1 second while I just get the... okay, so prior to the event, prior to Mercedes appearing at New Japan, because she debuted at New Japan Pro Wrestling, mm-hmm. Stephen Mulhausen said, sources, Mercedes Venano will be Saraya's partner next week on AEW Dynamite in LA against Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Could announce or make a major hint due to her still being under contract to WWE until the beginning of 2023.
Well, that's great. It's obviously a misdirect then. Saraya announced Toni Storm as her partner. Saraya's been a bit heelish, in my opinion. We'll get into that shortly, I think. Maybe Toni Storm's actually going to get beaten up by whoever the real partner is.
Yes.
Which is Mercedes Moné.
Mercedes Moné. However.
Oh.
What do you mean?
Well, you said however.
Oh, however. Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio said, quote, Mercedes is not in Los Angeles. She is not coming to AEW. I don't think she wants to make that commitment because if she goes to AEW, it's a long commitment.
Mm.
He also added, I've heard denials from AEW people in the match. They knew it was really screwed. That's why they had to announce somebody this week because they knew it was really screwed because everyone was thinking it was Mercedes and it wasn't her.
Well, I said this last week where they announced the tag match and everyone was like, oh my God, a mystery partner. Who could it be? And a lot of people, the first name that came to people's minds was Sasha Banks, now Mercedes Moné. I said, hold your horses there, folks. It's probably going to be Mercedes Martinez. And then a couple of weeks later, any mention of this tag, this massive tag match potentially, disappeared from AEW programming. And disappeared for about a month. And then they announced it. They started talking more about it last Friday on Rampage, and I think the Friday before. And now they've come out and said, it's Tony Storm. Stop speculating about the potential mystery tag partner.
And, you know, I've seen people in the chat here. I even thought myself, this is the Tony Storm is a misdirect so that next week she's attacked by Hikaru Shida, who felt jilted by not being chosen. And that spins off into a Storm Shida program. I thought it was a great little segment, actually, in terms of it sets up a storyline there for Storm and Shida. And like, and that'll be a wonderful feud, in fact. So that can spin off into that storyline. And then you get Mercedes Moné being the actual reveal of the tag partner.
Yeah, it's a curious way of going about it because AEW have taken many different approaches to debuting big free agents. You have the undoubtedly Hall of Fame talent, Christian Cage. And that's great, but everyone was like, ugh. Then they thought, okay, well, let's leak the Danielson CM Punk news so everyone buys tickets. It's an open secret, and we all get to be surprised when it actually happens. Surprised, in air quotes. And then they do straight up surprises. Oh, here's Suzuki. Here is Adam Cole. Stuff like that. And that were, or Malakai Black. Remember when he first debuted? And we're like, what? The 90-day non-compete, though. So the fact that they seem to be going between multiple different tacts actually doesn't say anything to me. It says, oh, they're trying to throw us off the scent. But at the same time, it says to me, oh, they're actually panicking.
I've got the exact same thought as well, actually, because the announcement this week that it's Tony Storm did make, I was like, I had that thought of, well, it could still be Mercedes Moné and you do that storyline. And then more thought about it, I was like, no, this also feels like people, particularly now because she's just debuted at Wrestle Kingdom, we need to just nip this in the bud now, because if we get to next week and I just reveal it's Tony Storm, that's probably going to get booed.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a part of me that still thinks if it is just Tony Storm next week, it may get booed. And I think unfairly so, because AEW never advertised that it was going to be Mercedes Moné. In fact, they very clearly advertised it's Tony Storm.
Yeah, but by that, it depends how prominently the match is focused on. If it's the main event.
Probably in the second quarter. sorry, in the second half.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you've got a lot of big matches next week. Chief amongst them are this tag match and the trio's final.
And Moxley Page.
If the tag match goes on last and there is no big free agent reveal, I don't blame the crowd for booing. Because it's like whenever you do a blackout spot now on TV, you do have to deliver an actual surprise. You can't just be
Satnam Singh.
It's Satnam Singh. It's Cole Carter or whoever. Was that his name?
But that was a purposeful misdirect.
I don't think it worked. But they've done, yeah, Satnam Singh is the better example there. So I do think that you have to take some responsibility when you start to tease something. So what is the purpose of making this a 6-week storyline?
Because it sets up the story between Storm and Shida. Because Saraya had a choice to make. She had a partner that she needed to pick. And she chose Storm, jilt Shida. That starts that feud there. Like that seems fun. I'm not saying it's a flawless storyline. But that is arguably...
On paper,
that is possibly the reason why they went down this direction. An alternative viewpoint is that they went down this direction thinking it was going to be Mercedes. It is not going to happen now. Mm. So they've had to now to course correct and just say, no, it's Tony Storm. And we've announced that ahead of time. So next week you can't be mad at us because we have announced ahead of time that it's Tony Storm.
It's strange. And I don't know where I land on it because... It really could go either way.
I know. It's made me very intrigued to see next week's episode for good nor bad.
But not like can't wait intrigued. I'm just like, what version of wreck will this be?
Because the other interesting point of this is that the Baker hater promo earlier in the night, Baker very clearly said, I'm the boss.
Yeah.
Wink. And gave a big wink to Jamie Hayter, which Brian Alvarez brings up on Wrestling Observer Radio, being like, if you aren't doing Mercedes Moné, why would you have that line in Baker's promo? Because it's just going to make people ask the question.
For the same reason that a lot of people in the company like to troll their audience. Like, why would the Elite do all the CM Punk bite spots? To troll Chicago, to troll CM Punk and that idea that something's been worked out between them. It could go either way. That could have just been a flippant insider reference, a very good one from Britt Baker, which doesn't amount to anything, or it could be an actual foreshadowing tease.
It could be a foreshadowing tease of the Forbidden Door 2 match. And like that, because if Mercedes is under a New Japan date, which she is, maybe one of those dates that she has is to do Forbidden Door. So rather than be revealed next week, you can then just hype up that she's going to have one match in an AEW ring, and it's going to be against Britt Baker at Forbidden Door 2. That's a dream match right there.
So regardless of this, what do you, if you had to put your money down, does Mercedes appear next week? And I'm talking money, not Mercedes.
Yeah.
Not Martinez.
I really still think that it is going to be Mercedes Moné, and I think Meltzer's been worked. This isn't the first time it's happened with him with AEW either, and that's what I think is happening here. I'm just going to read this last thing that Meltzer said, which I thought was very interesting as well. Quote, I also know from WWE that they are very strongly under the impression she will not wrestle for AEW. They think she's coming back at some point and she'll just get this out of her system. She'll do her New Japan matches. She's only contracted for a couple of them and then go back.
What does that make you think of?
I don't know. What does it make me think of?
When Dean Ambrose left WWE.
He'll just get it out of his system and he'll come back and we'll do a Shield reunion because we gave him the lovely send-off.
It's literally word for word what happened. Oh, yeah, it's fine. Like, he's going to go off for a break. Not a month later. John Moxley shows up in AEW. I'm going to, just partly because I am genuinely 50-50 on this, I will go, she won't return. And she'll end up with WWE, which is what I have been said. That's what my gut's been telling me. My gut isn't informed.
Well, no, your gut was this was the start of a working relationship between WWE and New Japan.
People are taking my words out of context. What I'm saying is WWE is trying to get their foot in the door. I don't think New Japan and WWE are talking to each other because New Japan are a very honor-based company and they have an agreement with AEW. But this is the first bit, so when in a year's time, in 2 years' time, Triple H can go, remember all those nice things we did for you?
Nice things we did, yeah.
Yeah. We're not saying there's actual backstage discussions.
We're the nice guys. Have you considered rebranding yourselves to NXT New Japan?
NXT Japan. Pro wrestling. Just one more thing on these two segments. They're backstage segments, one with Britt and Jamie, the other one with Saraya, Tony and Shida. I thought they were very good, very well done, because you had Tony Schiavone interviewing Britt. That's like her puff piece. But then Renee is friends with Saraya, so you had that as well. I feel Saraya is coming off so unlikable. She, at the start, it was not intentional, I think, but this was a heel action to go, well, I'm sitting next to the best wrestler in the world right now, Tony Storm, and Shida's right there, and she's like, what the hell?
Shida literally goes, huh? And she looks at Renee, and like, I thought Renee's selling of it was so good. Renee was like, ooh, that's an awkward thing to happen, to be a part of.
Yeah, so Saraya's got to be a heel, because she has not connected in the level she needed to be a babyface.
I also think as well, Hayter's getting so over as a babyface that you going into that match dynamic, like Saraya getting into the ring with Hayter, I think is not going to go Saraya's way. I think it's going to go very much Jamie Hayter's way, because this crowd are way more behind Jamie Hayter than Saraya. I think part of that has been down to Saraya's promos that she's done in the company since coming in, which have not been great. And everyone has had this just big, you know, fan swell support for the Haterade.
And also Britt's promos, because Britt keeps on saying, and in this promo here, we're AEW originals. Why do you have to tease a mystery partner like it's some external thing? The best wrestlers are right here. We've been here from day one and you come in and it's your house, whatever. It's a weird position to put those heels in, because they are now faces in the eyes of the AEW faithful.
Well, maybe next match, or next week's match, could be a double turn.
It could be a
triple turn, depending on, you know, because I think we are spinning off into a Storm Shida feud. I think that's quite clear from this promo segment here that you know, it could be a heel turn for Shida as well. And we're basically just going to do a lot of different moving pieces. So Toni Storm, I think, is the only one in this that remains a babyface, and everyone else changes alignments.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Well, let us know what you think. WrestleTalk.com/support. Get in your chance. I'm curious to see what people think of this segment overall.
I wrote in my notes on the Soraya segment later that Shida doesn't look too happy about this, and I don't think Twitter will be either. Twitter was more a case of, that's a red herring. Mm. That's a quite obvious misdirect. I saw one person being like, and this is why Tony Khan writes cinema, because he is sending us down one lane, but he's actually, it's a classic red herring tale.
And he's done that loads of times before.
He's done it plenty of times before. And so
the pinnacle reveal, fantastic.
Every chance that this is all done just to make the Mercedes reveal next week feel all the more like, aha, as opposed to, you know, 3 days ago or even yesterday before Dynamite, we were all like, okay, yeah, well, she's probably going to be the partner next week then. It has now led us into more of a, well, I don't know if she's going to be the partner, so I better tune in next week to find out which way this goes.
I don't think it's effective. I don't think it's well done. Matt Hennessy.
Entei was good.
Version 1 says, I don't think the partner is Banks. Meltzer reported that Banks is not expected to debut for AEW. She doesn't want to commit long-term to a company. And an AEW debut would require her to make a long-term commitment to the company.
Now, this is an interesting point, because this is something that I don't think Meltzer talks about on Wrestling Observer Radio, but Pete and I will be bringing up in tomorrow's Blackpool Content Club, which is, you're not signing for AEW. Like, Suzuki didn't sign for AEW when he wrestled matches. Neither did Ishii, neither did Will Ospreay or Aussie Open or the Motor City Machine Guns. They just had matches in AEW while under contract for someone else. She has a New Japan deal. That doesn't mean she can do a one-night appearance for, like, next week we're not getting a Mercedes Moné is All Elite graphic. Maybe we will do. Maybe Meltzer's completely out to lunch and he completely gets this wrong and she is going to sign to AEW for 3 years. Or she could just do a one-night appearance as part of her New Japan deal that's part of the agreement with AEW.
I don't know where this idea that AEW has to have long-term contracts comes from. Just say you want to coach in NXT because you've got a family member down there. You can get out in 6 months.
But in itself, that's a long-term commitment because you do have to have a family member down in NXT.
Charles Berg, fun show with entertaining matches from start to finish. I hope Soraya becomes a heel. She comes off very unlikable. This will be my last message about the calendar. I promise. I checked in and sadly, it was most likely stolen. What? So this is Charles Berg sent us a gift. Have we been able to find it?
I have not. No, I've been looking high and low for it.
We had
a look before Christmas. I've had a look since I've come back, and there's nothing in our pigeonholes. There was nothing left outside our doors. There's packages abound all over the place, but there is nothing for us waiting.
Nick Corvello, hey guys, my thoughts on the theorized Shida heel turn is that I don't feel it's the right time now. She appears so seldom now that she's more a special attraction and doesn't have the promo ability yet to keep or reignite heat through her Japan absences. And the division is still too heel heavy anyway for another beloved babyface to turn full heel. I feel she should be a tweener like AJ Styles during the Addiction Aces and Eights feud or Sting in 96. Why do you go to the Aces and Eights feud first?
Well, that's the most classic tweener example, isn't it?
AKA a bit of Lone Wolf would fit her well.
She doesn't have to be out and out heel. She doesn't have to be, like, you know, and there's some ways that Kevin Owens had a character change and people were like, oh, he's turned heel. I was like, no, he's just being Kevin Owens again. It doesn't have to be Shida has gone heel or Britt Baker is now our babyface. She can still be Britt Baker, just, you know, a Britt Baker that now gets cheered.
I feel like it is quite symptomatic of how poorly the women's division has been booked, because it is like, oh, we'll just turn, it feels like, I'll just turn her heel potentially. I don't think she will get turned heel though. I'm just Marcus. So if it's not Mercedes at this point, then maybe AEW shouldn't hint at things that are not nailed down, but it probably still is, right?
Well, that's where I would, they haven't hinted at it. Never once have they hinted, outside of Baker saying, I'm the boss, but she's always said that she's in charge of the women's division. AEW have never hinted that it's Sasha Banks.
I think you have to take some responsibility whenever you make a big tease like that, though. It's like the Christian Cage thing was a dud. The Satnam Singh lights out thing was a dud.
I will give you those two examples. Christian Cage, very much in particular, because at no point did anyone think, oh, it's a Hall of Famer. I only think anyone thought it was a Hall of Famer, as opposed to just, it's Christian.
Marcus continues, Max versus Danielson, 1 hour Iron Man, take my money. Also, all champions being homegrown talent feels good, man.
I mean, well, you could have had it better. You could have done.
Double J. And Jabroni714 for now. Do you really think Monet would wrestle on her debut? I think there's a good chance she appears in LA, but they would likely save her first match for a pay-per-view.
Well, that is something that Brian Alvarez pointed out on Wrestling Observer Radio, saying, like, surely if you're New Japan, you will want her first match outside of WWE to be the New Japan match that she has in San Jose.
Yeah, and you could also, Monet doesn't have to be the partner, does she? The match could take place at the end of the show, and then in the post-match, Monet comes down, sets up the Revolution match, which will be after that New Japan show in San Jose, and you do it that way.
Lastly, here from S. Morgan, who says, I actually think Shida joins Britt and Hayter as an AEW original.
Huh, that could work. Right, the full play-by-play of the show. Remember, keep getting your Omega chats to wrestletalk.com/support. I'll read out every single one of them. Over $5. This was a new look, Dynamite.
It was. I was expecting a new theme song as well. But yeah. It's the same theme song, but it's now got different graphics around it. Mm. And the crowd are now mic'd better.
Yes. Oh. Well, is the crowd mic'd better, or are the crowds just amazing right now?
No,
I don't know.
Because we heard from people who went to AEW shows that we said, man, it didn't sound like the crowd were particularly electric for this. People saying, like, I was in the building, the crowd was so loud all night long, but they weren't mic'd particularly well. But it does feel that since they've had this new lad come in from WWE, that every crowd they've been in front of sounds so much louder. And I noticed it particularly on this episode, because you had, like, the Break the Feud, do one, Dynamite. Like, that had that song, right? And that song ended, faded out. And all of a sudden the crowd went, as they just leant on the fader to make the crowd sound uber loud.
I It could be a combination of that, of the fact that the shows are just generally a bit better. Because those quieter crowds did coincide with a dip in the product's quality for about 6 months. And now I feel like since the start of December, maybe a bit before, everything has been back to old standards. But it's the crowd was so hot. So was, I think it was Colorado last week. Was it Texas for Winter is Coming? Like three all-time great crowds, like NXT TakeOver level crowds, One Night Stand level crowds. They made every single person feel like an Attitude Era star.
Just wait till they get to Long Island.
Oh, I cannot wait. Because this opening match had Chris Jericho take on Ricky Starks. And in the finish, which I thought was expertly booked, Jericho put Starks in the Walls of Jericho. And sometimes when we rewatch old pay-per-views from WWF early noughties, when we're doing Wrestle Talk Extra, go to Patreon and you can listen to those, we hear those pops for the walls and the crowd goes ballistic for a submission. And we're like, oh, it's a shame they're not like this anymore. This was that level of pop.
And that 2000 period in particular, two of the most over things in WWF were the Walls of Jericho and the Crippler Crossface. Mm. Like, if the Crippler Crossface got locked in, the crowd would go ballistic. Walls of Jericho, very rarely would they be the end of a match, but everyone would go ballistic for those moves. I haven't heard people pop for the Walls of Jericho like this in years upon years.
And it really helped Ricky Starks, because Ricky Starks ended up winning. That all of the finishes on this show were really, really well
so good
laid out. Because Jericho, I think he, Codebreaker, Judas Effect, Starks blocks the Judas Effect, but then Jericho gets him in the walls.
Yeah.
So already a bit of back and forth.
Tries to get him into the Rochambeau, Jericho reverses that into the walls, and he's locking in the walls. This crowd are going nuts, they're hoping that Ricky doesn't tap out, really cheering for Starks to survive this. And Angelo Parker jumps up on the apron, distracts referee Aubrey Edwards, and on the other side of the ring, Matt Menard grabs the bat and docks Ricky Starks right in the face, and he goes out cold. And I thought to myself, I was like, oh, Ricky, no.
That was it? I thought that was it?
I thought that was it. I was like, oh, he's knocked out. They're going to call that the finish. I was like, oh, that sucks for Starks. Yeah, like, it's a good way to protect him in defeat, but man, like, that's not the finish I'd have loved to have seen. And then they do the three-arm drop, one of your favorite spots in all of professional wrestling.
Because it's The Rock's main thing. He's babyface in peril. And what is Ricky Starks if not The Rock Reborn? Dropped it once. Dropped it twice. The camera slightly botched it. But then when he dropped it a third time, and he fights out and he hits a spear and he wins. And one of the criticisms against Jericho has, even though he just had one of the best in-ring years of his career at 52 years old, is that he does not actually put people over. By the end of the feud, he gets the win. He moves on to the next thing. Like, where's Eddie Kingston now after that elongated feud? Here, he has now lost spectacularly to Action Andretti, which was on Chris Jericho's name bar, first match since the loss to Action Andretti when he came down, and Ricky Starks. And I said it after the Action Andretti loss, this guy needs a mental breakdown losing streak.
Mm-hmm. Where do you stand now on your comments that they dropped the ball with Ricky Starks?
Well, yes, I said at the time, I was like, if they do not follow this up, that's what I'm concerned about, because I've just had a year of people getting lost in the shuffle. I had Ricky Starks and Will Hobbs have a great feud, then get shortchanged at the pay-per-view.
5-minute match.
And I haven't heard from them since. So I don't think that's on me to then be like, oh, okay, they built someone up, he loses, he goes back down.
AEW never teased Mercedes Moné. You did.
Exactly. And I said, look, if they do pay off this and they keep his momentum going, this is okay. But right now, because of the last year, I don't like it. And now they've done this.
Yeah.
So well done. Ricky Starks feels really hot.
I thought this was a great showing for Starks. I thought Jericho was awesome in this match. The crowd reaction for him was, for both guys, was so, so great. And like, what a finish for Starks as well, because not only was it getting out of the wall, there was a small package near fall as well that the crowd really popped for. And then He takes out Menard. He takes out Parker. Then hits the spear on Jericho for the win. So he beat three guys. This was Jericho going out of his way to make Starks the winner of this match and put him over as the winner of this match. And even though Jericho did get to stand tall at the end, because the rest of JAS come down and they beat up Starks, Action Andretti runs down to make the save, but he gets taken out as well. The JAS down tall after Jake Hager powerbombs Ricky Starks off the apron through a table on the floor. It was, but that's not like, yeah, Jericho's won at all, but Starks is the one that got the win. And as MJF points out later in the show, wins and losses do matter here.
Yeah. Really good stuff. Loved it. Hangman Page then came down to the ring to talk to Tony Schiavone and how his medical condition is doing. And Hangman said, next week, as long as my brain scan's okay, I will be able to fight John Moxley. I think he said at the forum about 8 times, just to drill that into your head.
They were doing a lot of that on the show. Every single person promoting matches next week were like, at the forum.
At the forum. And then he
said,
someone
from the UK, it means nothing. Mm.
And then he said, I'll knock your dick in the dirt.
He sure did.
It'll be a Breakfast Club, right?
Yeah. I'll knock your dick in the dirt.
And that was too much. So Moxley came out.
And broke 2 microphones.
Yep. swore as well. Then the Seattle crowd were chanting, we can't hear you.
Yeah.
And Moxley was like, effing mic or something.
Well, it's because, so,
but it was working. I could hear it.
It was for us, it was fine. Yeah. So they've clearly got 2 feeds. One for the... for the audience in the building and one for the TV feed. So we had it clear as day and it was working for us, but the audience in attendance could not hear him.
So
weird for us to be hearing John Moxley cut a promo and it's fine and the crowd would be chanting, we can't hear you. Just like, what? Sorry, you can't hear me into the microphone that we can hear.
It's a new production team backstage. It's a new look for Dynamite. But the audio issues streak continues.
Lol, still production issues.
But what happened here was Hangman then said, I'm not mad at you, John, for knocking me out. I'm actually mad that I came back and before I could even say a word to you, you made fun of my concussion. And whatever, I'm still really excited to see them fight next week. I just thought that as a motivation is such a step down from the amazing line he delivered a couple of weeks ago, where he's like, I forgot, I couldn't remember my kid's name.
Yeah, and so Moxley making a joke about that is what, like he said, I've been knocked out of time. That's part of this game. I've been knocked out by enemies. I've been knocked out by foes. I've been knocked out by my best friends. It's Moxley not taking that seriously. Like he lost, he couldn't remember his son's name. To Mox, that's funny. That's where the anger comes from. It's not being knocked out by him. It's that Mox had no remorse for what happened. So now he is coming for revenge. He had no intention of going for revenge because getting knocked out is part of this sport. But now he is going after revenge. I actually thought it was a wonderful bit of character motivation.
Oh, it's not so enticing for me.
It's so within Hangman's character as well.
Well, I think what's more dramatically and engaging and complex and fitting of Hangman's character is that he accepts all that. This is part of the sport. It wasn't actually Mox's fault. It was an accident. This is what you sign up for when you have a match. But you made me forget my kid's name. I have to beat the crap out of you now. I think that is so much better.
That's so basic, though. Like this is tragic.
It's a tragic thing.
But this is a next level up from that.
I disagree.
And then I thought he was. Now he actually wants revenge. And Mox still like, well, dude, the next time I hit you with Ilaria, I'm going to make sure you don't get back up.
Yeah.
Production issues aside, I thought this was awesome. I thought every single part of this was awesome. Production issues aside.
They both really sold that we want to fight each other right now, but we cannot because the actual fight would then be in jeopardy.
It was a lovely setup by Hangman earlier in the promo as well, where he effectively said that me coming out and brawling with Moxley and getting into fights with him every week has actually just made my recovery time longer. And so for Moxley to stand there next to him, Moxley was like, I want to fight you now. But he knows all I've got to do is just wait 7 more days and then I can do it and it's fine. And we can just do this and we can do this and I can literally make sure you never get back up.
It's felt like a proper pay-per-view caliber build. And it's happening on next week on TV. So I'd be curious to see where they go after that on the road to Revolution.
Yeah.
Do Do you want to talk about the next
one? Well, it's about time some true stars showed up. You know, oh God, we've had John Moxley, we've had Hangman Page.
Homegrown this, originals that.
Chris Jericho, Ricky Starks, blah, blah, blah. It's time for the true stars to step up here. Winner, winner. My World Team TNA taking on the Acclaimed for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. The Acclaimed, do you know what? They've had a little bit of a pop here and there in those bingo halls. They've sold a handful of t-shirts. There are some people who think the Sesame thing is funny, but the real stars of Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett can save this tag team division that has been floundering. And this match, look, I know everyone is really high on Omega versus Ospreay because it weren't half bad. But it was not Team TNA versus the Acclaimed for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. If this isn't in the top five matches of the year at the end, I'll don't know what's happened.
Well, I think by default, it's in the top five AEW matches of the year so far.
Jeff, okay, so I'm going to read you this tweet I got today because it really, really made me laugh. I'll find it for you now. I should have had this prepared. Roy sent me a message saying, remember when Luke Owen was excited about Jeff Jarrett and even said, quote, as excited as I am, he's probably not going to be on screen every single week. Now JJ is challenging for the tag titles. Do you know what? I'm so happy to be wrong. I've never been happier to be wrong. So happy that I was so wrong because Jeff Jarrett is an awesome, awesome carny heel. In an old school carny wrestling way. The heat he got from the crowd. Who else in the tag? The guns certainly aren't getting this.
It was genuine heat.
It was genuine heat.
It was not go away heat. That was proper heat. And there are a few better at it than Jeff Jarrett when he's in the right level. If it's a mid-level,
that's
mid-card
perfect
thing.
Spot for
perfect.
Him.
Perfect.
Comes out here, the last outlaw. He has saved Jay Lethal's AEW run, as well as Sonjay Dutt and Satnam Singh, revitalized this group. And I loved the finish of this. Match was, you know, baby faces run wild. The heels take over, get a commercial break. Heels continue to work over Caster. Bowens gets the hot tag. Earlier in the match, Billy Gunn got ejected from ringside because Daddy Ass got ejected from ringside because Jay Lethal slid out the ring and slapped Billy Gunn in the face. So Billy Gunn tried to anyone's reference, like, no, you get out of here. And then towards the end of the match, because Sonjay Dutt and Satnam Singh were trying to get involved, the referee ejected them too. And in the melee, Jeff Jarrett hits the greatest finish ever. Everybody takes it flawlessly. It's never looked terrible. He hits the stroke. It's a masturbation reference. And he goes to pin Anthony Bowens, who gets his foot on the ropes. And Sonjay Dutt pushes the foot off the ropes. 1, 2, 3. I legit thought they'd switch the titles.
So did I. And what's more surprising is I was okay with it. This match was so fun. It really is last week's music video rap that took this feud from, this is a bit of a waste of a tag title
feud.
Sure,
it wasn't Sonjay Dutt's rap, which was better than Caster's one.
To an actual, it's made this feud. And Jeff Jarrett, I must say, for a 55-year-old guy, he looks, it's like Chris Jericho's 52.
Yeah.
He looks totally fine and very orange.
Jeff Jarrett looks the same as he did in 1999.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I have no idea how that works. And they're celebrating with the tag titles and stuff. The crowd are going boo because Team TNA have won. The Acclaimed are all sad and stuff. Aubrey Edwards turns heel and announces that they cheated, and they announce this match must continue. Boom, Anthony Bowens with the roll up. 1, 2, 3. The Acclaimed retained, and such as it is, it's old school Memphis wrestling, which is what Jarrett excels at. And then I was like, that was such a perfect match. It was such a perfect finish. Every single person was perfect. And later on, Jeff Jarrett cuts this promo where he called it Carney BS. I was like, it's even more perfect now.
They will be having a battle, a match at Battle of the Belts.
I've never wanted to watch a Battle of the Belts, but I'll be watching that one.
It's a no-holds-barred match. I don't get why. Surely it should just be a no-DQ, everyone brawl match so Daddy Ass can get involved, Satnam Singh can get involved.
Isn't it just a different way of saying a no-DQ match? You know how like WWE has 12 different ways of saying it's a street fight?
Yeah. Enter name of town.
It's what no-holds-barred, no-DQ, hardcore, they all mean the same thing.
This was really good. I wouldn't have been against Jarrett and Lethal winning here and then the Acclaimed winning the titles back on Friday.
I'd have loved
it. Actually wouldn't have been against it. Although, was Rampage taped on tonight?
Oh, I don't know, actually.
In that case, that wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah.
But if it was a live thing, that would have been fun.
I mean, I had an absolute blast with this. My daughter got up from her slumber and came down, was having her bottle of milk in the morning. And she was so cheery this morning. She was so happy because, I get up early, I come home late, so I sometimes don't get to see her. So she saw me, she was like, oh, this is brilliant. And she just wanted to play with me. She wanted to clap and, you know, the bottle and this and the other. I could not focus on her because she was desperately trying to get my attention. And I was like, kid, Jeff Jarrett just won the AEW tag titles. I'll deal with you in a second.
Oh, man, I thought you loved your kid more than anything in the world. I underestimated your love for Jeff Jarrett. Hayter and Britt had the sit-down with Shivani after that. Jack Perry challenged the firm for a tag match with Hook. I think that's next week.
Yes. Is that Big Bill's first AEW match?
I think it will be, yeah.
Yeah, Big Willie.
Bryan Danielson comes out to an enormous reaction from the Seattle crowd. This was like 2013 Daniel Bryan. Everyone's going yes.
Yep.
Again, part of that sort of attitude era level pops. And he took on Tony Nese. And he had probably the best two-minute match you can ever have.
Oh, yeah.
Beat him clean. It was, you know, the usual Bryan template, all the moves, brilliant. And then he says, I'm not through. Get out here, Max. I'll wrestle you two. MJF comes out and they have a great promo back and forth.
Long promo. This is like 10 minutes.
I didn't mind it though.
No, it's not a bad thing. It's just like, it was going on. I was like, wow, this is still going, but it does not feel like it's losing any steam.
Yeah, I mean, for those two guys who are so good on the mic, this is really the first time they've properly gone at each other. I think that you need a 10-15 minute segment. That's standard on WWE, 15 to 20 minutes, well, but it feels weird on AEW.
MJF's getting his reps in before he goes to WWE at the end of the year. I thought, like, Danielson was so great in this segment. I thought MJF's work was beautiful. Mm. You know, he does the usual standard MJF stuff, being like, I'm not going to wrestle in front of these idiots in Seattle. Yuck, 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 yuck. Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, you may call yourself the GOAT, but it's only because your mother had sex with one and that's why you look like one, blah, 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 blah. And then Bryan Danielson starts talking about how everyone's had sex with MJF's mum. And MJF was like, you can't say that. His selling of it's so great. Yeah. It's flabbergasted. It's like one of the reasons why I love Dan Lambert, of like, I can say anything I want to you and I'm going to go really push the boundaries. But the second anyone says it back to me, you can't possibly say something like that.
It's kind of like Brock Lesnar selling moves. It has to be the right guy that he respects that can legitimately go against him. And when Brock Lesnar's selling that type of offense, he's actually amazing. It's like Max. You don't often get a receipt on Max that he will react to. But when you do, he is so good at getting over how petulant and thin-skinned he really is. Like when Ricky Starks cut that amazing promo on him, low blow. Just, you know, such a petulant reply. And here, yeah, because Bryan Danielson then got the entire crowd chanting that they have had sex with MJF's mum. But the cruel truth at the core of this is MJF's mum, kayfabe, hates him.
Oh, yeah.
She's on Bryan's side.
It was so great. And then MJF, you know, in a true Dan Lambert style as well, said, look, just because internet marks think you're really good, wrestling journalists who've never set foot in the ring think you're one of the best wrestlers, I've been put over by actual wrestling legends like Disco Inferno, Eric Bischoff, and the smartest man in wrestling, Jim Cornette.
When he said Disco Inferno, because I thought he was going to go somewhere. I didn't know he was going to start on Disco Inferno.
On Disco Dickface. Oh, so God. Great.
That was so funny. And I hope Disco Inferno realizes how ironic that the use of his name
he
is.
He won't.
He won't.
He's a moron. He won't.
Someone's going to clip this out now and send it to him. And he's going to cut a promo on us on his
and it'll be
Max said, well, if you want to face me, you've got to become the number one contender. You've got to win this many matches until you've got to wrestle every week, win them all until February 8th. This is the usual Max template. Mm. And both guys called this out in a kind of postmodern way. MJF said, yeah, I know I'm accused of making people jump through hoops, but this is... And I'm like, I actually don't mind it. I think it's a really nice way to structure stories. I'm not bored of it.
Yeah.
It feels new every time. And then Brian Danielson said, flipping the power dynamics on their head, really. He said, well, I'm going to come out here and win matches anyway. I'm not doing it for you. And when I do face you, because I've done that, it's going to be a 1 hour Iron Man match.
Yeah, if I agree to your stip, then you'll allow me to pick the stipulation for the Revolution match. 1 hour Iron Man match. And the reason why he has picked this is because he wants to expose Max for claiming he's the best wrestler. But I'm going to expose you've got no cardio, expose you've got no footwork, expose you've got no technique. That's a Danielson thing to do, to be like, no, I'm just going to prove that I'm the better wrestler than you are, which is going to be all the more sweeter when MJF wins by cheating right at the end.
Yeah, yeah. And the stipulation announcement got a huge pop from the crowd because the crowd were great anyway. But again, it's like, remember when Hell in a Cell used to get announced as a stipulation and a promo back and forth, and the 2001 audience, even in Corpus Christi, would go, oh my God! You don't get that anymore. You don't get pops for it's going to be a pitch black match. It's just everyone's like, what? Huh? Oh yeah, I figured it was going to be a Hell in a Cell match because the next pay-per-view is Hell in a Cell. After a decade of stipulations being robbed of their power, this was such a great character story, perfect addition.
And I loved as well, like, Max not wanting to even agree to Danielson's, I'll do your stip if I can do the stip for the pay-per-view. And he was just like, no, I'll just make you wrestle matches and tie you up in legal with Smart Mark Sterling until my contract expires at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Spinning that plate.
Yeah.
I thought it was an awesome, awesome promo segment.
Yep. Loved it from top to bottom. We'll rattle through the next few bits because we're running a bit behind. Swerve versus AR Fox had a bloody incredible match.
Didn't
unlike just anything else on the show, sort of a Lucha Underground throwback from when they were both in there, where the story was they both had each other expertly scouted. They backflipped out of their backflip moves as counters, and Swerve used something?
They didn't even say what it was. They just said he was handed something by Parker Boudreaux, but they couldn't see what it was. But it allowed him to hit the double stomp for the win.
Double stomp to the throat after a Death Valley driver off the top turnbuckle onto the apron. This was like how Bryan Danielson had one of the best 2-minute matches you can ever have. This was one of the best 10-minute high flying matches you can ever have.
I wrote my notes like, in another era, this would have blown people away. Like,
this would have been a match of the year in another era.
Like, it really reminded me of Ospreay Ricochet.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
when
yeah,
like yeah, that just got shared around, you know, the match that led to the Vader match, like it got shared around and shared around and shared around. In like 2013, this would have like blown people's minds. And it's mad, here we are, 2023, that it's just another episode of Dynamite, isn't it?
Swerve is so cool.
So good.
Then we had the Soraya backstage sit-down we've already covered. The Gun Club came out. You didn't like this?
I didn't think this was very good. I think the crowd heat for it reveals that.
Look, the Gun Club, I don't like them either, but I think, is it Colton in particular, is a very decent promo.
Yeah.
And they are, for the role they're doing, for the characters they're doing, this is spot on.
The whole playing FTR's music and then laughing, being like, you should have seen all of your faces. What was it? Crickets. And I give AEW enormous credit for trying to push homegrown talents. You know, these are guys that have been with the company since pretty much day one, wrestling on Dark and Dark Elevation every single week, showing, you know, and getting and proving and showing that they can do something. But they're like, nothing's clicking here. I don't know whether it's the firm. I don't know whether it's because it's FTR and people don't want to be seeing FTR feud with the guns. But this just is not clicking. Because you're right, like this is like Edge and Christian levels of goofy heel comedy. But these two guys are not Edge and Christian. Or as over as Edge and Christian were.
Yeah, it did not click with the audience. But it was very short. It was 5 minutes. It was, by the way, it was they came out, they staged a kind of fake memorial service for FTR's AEW careers.
FTRIP.
Yeah.
Very clever.
And also they said Top Guns out at the end. Mm-hmm. Top Gun. Like Top Guys. I thought that the thought they put into how they're riffing off this feud with FTR was very good.
Yeah, it was.
I thought the performances were good.
And they were.
It's just something did not connect with the crowd, but hopefully it's a matter of time. Sky Blue and talk about not connecting with the crowd. Sky Blue and Kira Hogan then took on Jade Cargill and Red Velvet.
The crowd were at least into Cargill.
Oh yeah, they were
massively into Jade Cargill, just not into the other three.
Sky Blue and Red Velvet actually had a really decent, well-rehearsed minute opening sequence to try and get the crowd into them. It was like near fall, near fall, near fall, near fall, and the most the crowd got to was so just an uphill struggle.
Can we tack the star in?
Yeah. But this was furthering the Cargill Red Velvet. Is Red Velvet going to turn on Cargill? Is Cargill going to turn on Velvet? And Velvet eventually walked off, leaving Cargill to win by herself. I'm not into this feud.
I think that because I think we're setting up Jade versus Red Velvet for Revolution. Like that's the TBS title match for Revolution. But because we're nearing 50 wins, I really feel like they should be doing something bigger than Red Velvet. Because I don't think anyone's going to buy Red Velvet winning the title. So you want to put someone in the ring with Jade that feels like she could win the belt from her. And so I don't think Red Velvet's the direction to go there. Nothing against Red Velvet, just it's not time to do that.
I feel like we're about 6 months past this streak being impressive. Now it's an albatross.
Yeah.
And especially you've got Willow Nightingale right there, who is someone you could make. And why wait till the 50? You know?
I agree.
We got the Jarrett promo backstage, which set up the rematch. Where he called it Carney.
Called what happened in that match was Carney BS. And Jarrett's right.
Announcement that Danielson is going to take on Takeshita next week.
Hell yeah.
Oh, baby. And I think Excalibur, it finally broke him. He couldn't get in the last match. He stumbled. He ran down like three different
cards. Bless his heart. Bless his cotton socks. Every week, I'm like, come on, this week. This week. And next week, on Dynamite, it's going to be. And then it's like, next, come on, this time, you got to get it. Got to get it. And it's always when he stumbles over. Sometimes it's not his fault. They put up the wrong graphic. Just maybe next week.
And the main event was Darby Allin versus Samoa Joe for Joe's TNT title. This was excellent. In Darby's hometown of Seattle, they had a match early December, which was just terrific. And Joe murdered him. It wasn't even close. And this match was different in that Darby cheated. And he attacked Joe before the bell with a skateboard and a ladder, weakened poor Joe, and Joe went on to lose when Darby exposed... took advantage of an exposed turnbuckle.
But he didn't expose it.
So Allin has turned heel in his hometown, as has Sting for endorsing him, and he's the new TNT champion.
I think this match was awesome.
Dastardly.
This match was so much
great.
Fun.
It was really good.
Nick Wayne was at ringside, and Joe attacked Nick Wayne before the match, so Darby did a big dive onto him. And then you're right, like attacked him with a skateboard.
Well, it's really smart booking. Yeah. So Nick Wayne, if you're not aware, his wrestler Buddy Wayne's son. He's like, I think he's 17 currently.
He is. He signed to like an AEW's future thing.
Yeah, so when he turns 18, he will be able to wrestle for the company. But that was announced at a show. Darby handed in the contract. So when Joe attacked Nick Wayne at ringside, Darby had babyface justification to attack Joe before the bell.
Yeah.
So and in the end, Darby really hurt his, well, kayfabe hurt his knees on the dive off the top rope, which Joe then worked over. So even though Darby, I'm being facetious at the start with the cheating, It was a really well booked match, as everything was match wise on this show.
I mean, tell you what, dude, like rough bumps in this. When Joe hit that Uranagi on Darby Allin onto the stairs, woof, no thank you. No thanks. The Will Ospreay DDT is one thing. I think I'd probably prefer to attempt that than I would what Darby Allin went through.
Yeah, Darby probably watched the Ospreay Omega match and went, nah, not today, guys. I'm one up in you.
When he did the dive off the ladder, Taz just went, he does this sort of thing on his day off. Darby tried various comebacks, but every time he did, Joe just murdered him some more. I loved watching Joe wrestle. But yeah,
so
Joe went into an exposed turnbuckle, a superb code red by Darby Allin, hit two coffin drops, got the win in his hometown. I really didn't think Joe would drop the title this early into the run, specifically because I thought this King of Television thing was really starting to gather some steam.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you have that hometown pop and that big reaction, you're like, ah, do you know what? Maybe it's the right call. It's the right time.
I think stars aligned to make this the right decision. It's a shame it's come at the expense of Joe's run, which was very good.
Great way to put it.
It's the first match. It's like the first show of the year. All the other champions are AEW originals. It just, the opportunity was, you couldn't not take this.
Yeah.
Sting coming out afterwards in the confetti celebration, hugging him. It was a wonderful moment. I'm surprised, but I understand why Wardlow didn't cost Joe the match. I thought that would be a way to build a Joe rematch into this and also further the Wardlow-Joe feud.
Be interesting to do a triple threat at Revolution. Mm. Darby being the ping pong ball between the two big ping pong bats.
Rocking a hard place kind of thing. But this was really, really good. Really good.
Yeah.
Just one question before we get into our overall ratings.
Please do.
And
please, everybody, don't come at me for this, because I am right here.
It's a great way to start your argument by saying, just so you all are aware, I'm right.
I am not contradicting what I've said in the past by asking this. I'm merely saying there is a middle ground between everything. I think they should have at least referenced Kenny Omega winning the United States title from Will Ospreay.
I agree. Particularly because you promoted the best of seven thing. Mm-hmm. And like they talked about the fact that FTR lost the IWGP championship. I was legit surprised. A, there was no promotion last week that Kenny was facing Ospreay. And I was really surprised there was nothing about him winning the US title on this show.
No video clip. And it helps your own storytelling. Is this US title win momentum good for next week? Or is the amount of battery he took bad for it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so now I can read all the comments saying, I thought you didn't want AEW to focus on any other promotions. Overall, I thought this was an incredible show. Best show of the year by default, 87%.
Yeah, this match, this show ruled. Mm. If Team TNA had won the belts, it would have been show of the decade. But, you know, you can't have everything, I guess.
Let's get into our...
We've got some shout-outs.
Patreon podcast shout-outs. Of course, you too can get your own shout-outs by going to patreon.com/WrestleTalk. Is the music cued?
Well, a lot's been broken on slobs as of late, so I'm not going to attempt it just in case
it is busted.
But what I will say is that yesterday was Wednesday, so you know what that means. A brand new podcast dropped into the Patreon RSS feed. It was the mailbag episode with myself and Sullivan Bo Brown. Next week on Wednesday will be WrestleTalk Behind the Scenes. Myself, Ollie Davis, Pete Quinnell, talking about our Christmases. I have an extended chat about service stations, much to the delight of Pete. We talk about Survival Series. We talk about our new video format that we did over the Christmas period, predicting AEW wrestlers 2023 and things like that. And next week, we're going to be recording the delayed December Wrestle Talk Extra when we're reviewing ROH Final Battle 2011.
Not 2012.
Not 2012, which is what Ollie watched.
I watched that on Monday. Great show. Mate. I'm not even annoyed. I just loved it.
Yeah. It's a good show, mate.
I even asked you before I went off on Christmas holidays, is it the one with Owens and Zane's ladder war?
And I said,
and you and Pete both said no. And I went, oh, cool. I won't. I'll make sure not to watch that one. I'm loaded up on a club. I'm like, oh, yeah, I get to watch the ladder war. Yes, I get to watch R.D. Evans versus Prince Nana. Five star. But yes, thanks to our wonderful pledge Amazon patron, Chris, the Cypriot sensation, Patru.
The venerable Jesse Venable.
The cleaner Kenny Scher.
Because Kevin Stone Con said so.
The British Bulldog, Philip Boy J. Smith Jr.
WrestleTalk's personal ring announcer, Rodrigo Benitez.
Ronald Coleman, baby.
He can last Sean Fur longer than you in the ring.
Starbucks Stephen Costa.
Shield Maiden, the Zorn East.
Will the MS Warrior Stewart.
And lastly, for this Hall of Fame class, on the 5th of January, 2023, the baker, Adam Cakebread. Just before we get into our rest of our mega chats, can I do a quick call out for our audience?
Yeah, yeah.
We're so close to 70K subscribers.
Less close.
Less than 500 off hitting our 70K goal. And when we do hit our 70K goal, as we've talked about a couple of times throughout 2022, we're going to do a Royal Rumble randomizer, a 10-hour live stream. You don't have to be fair for all 10. I will do all 10. You can dip in if it's a Rumble you want to watch. And we're going to basically randomize Royal Rumbles. I've got a wheel that's going to appear on screen. We'll spin that wheel. It'll pick a Rumble. And we will all watch that Rumble together. And we'll watch them across 10 hours.
Please make that happen.
Yeah,
we are. But do make that happen. It's what a good month to do that. January,
exactly,
Royal Rumble month.
So we're less than 500 away from reaching that target.
Tell your friends. Matthew Robinson. Wow, it seems like everything is happening next week. Can't wait to go to the Forum in LA. In the Forum. And see Hangman and Mox go at it. I just wish Sasha was the partner. But she is doing something much better. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, if it's not Mercedes, then you know they announced that ahead of time that it's not. And the more I think about it, the more I think it isn't. Because I do think, yeah, New Japan might want her first match to be the one in San
and
Jose.
She's going back to WWE. Yeah. Matthew Robinson again. Wow, this show was so good. And after watching Wrestle Kingdom, what did you guys think? I'm going to be at Dynamite next week in LA. Can't believe Omega will be able to do that ladder match after Ospreay. I will be on the hard cam with my Wrestle Talk shirt.
You are one of the cool ones, Matt Robinson.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, well, Omega is he's a freak of nature.
Ket. I'm not against an hour-long Iron Man match, but I know it's going to come at the end of a 16-hour-long AEW pay-per-view. I hope Tony dials back on the number of matches for the next pay-per-view. Less is more.
I think he will learn that lesson one day. Revolution may not be that day, but he will learn that lesson one day.
I think some people are just inherently maximalists, and he has shown me nothing to suggest he will start to focus things.
You'd have thought. After All Out would have been the time he'd realised this is too many matches.
Bonesaw Buck, 823. Good day, gents. Dynamite was okay. I definitely enjoyed the MJF promo as always, and Darby won back the TNT title just in time for me to get his newest figure, which includes the belt. Also, Money in the Bank in London. Watch party, yes? Keep up the good work.
Hope so. Well,
just watch this space. Hopefully next week. Bonesaw Buck 823 again. Also, Ollie, I'd agree that Britt teasing the boss was mere trolling, if not for the fact that every other tease like that paid off. I distinctly remember Darby's best in the world line before All Out last year. They don't tease it if it isn't true. I think they do a lot. Like, Max is teasing going to WWE. I don't think he's going to WWE. Well, they teased Punk.
We'll see next year, eh?
Marlon Jackson, what are we doing? Ricky gets a win over a legend and immediately gets beat down. Jade is doing nothing meaningful. Sky gets a title shot after losing. Darby winning undermines what they were doing with Joe and Wardlow. I want to enjoy, but the booking.
Well, I think the Joe and Wardlow feud felt like it was done.
No, he cut his hair last week. That's going to build to a return for Wardlow with a new look.
I thought it was a new look and it would just move on to something else.
Oh, no, I think he needs to get a win back. I thought the booking was excellent on this show. But I guess if you've taken a negative view of I agree about Jade, but you've taken a negative view of all those things. Jade, I thought it was good.
Jade is doing something meaningful. It is a story. It's just a story that I don't think anyone particularly cares about. And I suppose in a way you could say it's not a meaningful story, but she is in a story.
Calum Vickers. Was at the show last night. Crowd was insane. The new set looked fantastic, though I missed the heel face tunnel.
Oh, yeah. That is now
That's
gone.
That's what was different.
That's what's different.
I was just like, oh, they've got a new commentary table. I didn't realise they got
so overwhelmed by neon.
To think, went to a show in 2023 with Sting, Billy Gunn, Jericho, and a Jeff Jarrett title match. Aubrey Edwards over everything. Marlon Jackson...
I want to enjoy, but the booking is baffling.
Right,
like,
this is a continuation.
Yeah, like, why does MJF? Why does every MJF feud need to have the same angle of challengers having to fight people of MJF's choosing? Here we are in year four of AEW, and the only thing that's changed is the set. I need Tony to get some help with creative.
I think that would be great if he outsourced some booking decisions, definitely. But I actually think this is a show that is a really good fundamental booking episode and really ties into the company's future.
Agreed.
Noah Fortner. My girlfriend watched wrestling for only the second time last night, and her thoughts on Dynamite were that Jade Cargill is the hottest woman on the planet. Swerve Strickland has Riz. What's Riz?
What does Riz mean?
Why does Darby do that to his body? And WTF is a daddy ass.
Riz meaning?
What the WTF is a Riz?
One's ability to seduce a potential love interest. Riz.
Wow. Riz. Enrique Jr.
Do I have Riz?
You've got loads of Riz.
Have I got all the Riz? Mm-hmm. I think you got some Riz about you.
Cheers, mate. Enrique Jr., finally getting to see the Walls of Jericho live was so much fun. What wrestling move made you guys react the same way live?
Tomohiro Ishii hitting a suplex on Keith Lee. Mm.
Speedball Mike Bailey's triple pirouette across the ring and then a super kick in the corner. Will Campbell. Hi, guys. I imagine Luke went from 0 to 100 back to 0 in the span of about 3 seconds when Jarrett and Lethal won, then lost the tag titles when he watched it back this morning. He confessed that he ignored his own daughter. Though I do have to say that the Sanjay rope push was a great fake out.
Yeah, no one has to, like, you know, I will admit that spot was good. We can all just say it was good. Like, we can all say it was very good.
Jabroni714, thoughts on if the Hangman versus Mox match in LA were to end with another concussion angle? Your choice on who. They could build to not being cleared for another match, so they do a lights out unsanctioned match at Revolution or St. Patrick's Day Slam.
Doing another concussion angle.
I think it would be a bit distasteful.
Yeah, like if Paige hits the buckshot and it knocks John out.
I mean, maybe there is something in that.
Yeah.
And then Mox could finally... Well, actually, I'm just Marcus, actually has this idea. So someone separate. The previous one was from Jabroni714. Luke, I agree Jarrett and Lethal are better heels than the Ass Boys, but is that a high bar to step over?
It is true.
Also, I think next week it should constantly be Hangman and Mox fighting backstage, leading to a lights out at the pay-per-view, so Mox can go on vacation.
Here's the problem with that, is that I don't think you can do an unsanctioned match, a lights out unsanctioned match at Revolution, because that has to go on last. Mm. Because the whole point of it is, the show is over, this is not sanctioned by AEW, we have turned the lights off. These guys are just doing this now. If you want to stay, you can stay and watch, but this has got nothing to do with us. Which means it has to go on after the 1 hour Iron Man match with Danielson and MJF.
I wouldn't want to follow that.
I wouldn't want to follow it either. So I think doing it at St. Patrick's Day Slam, though, that's a very good idea.
The SL underscore ID underscore 47789 lowercase D94 hyphen lowercase CDA9-3 EE7- says, I'm almost convinced Tony hired Jeff Jarrett and booked that whole ending to pop only me and Luke, and I'm perfectly okay with that. With that said, hashtag justice for Jeff.
I'm just glad that finally everyone's on board with what I've been saying this whole time. Everyone was like, oh, God, this is such demeaning for the Acclaimed to be working with so many other tag teams. It's the best thing the Acclaimed have done since winning the belts.
Kid Phantom version 3. Loved the show last night from top to bottom. Two things. One, I don't know if someone mentioned this already, but Money in the Bank will be in London. Yes, they
certainly
have.
We're
very excited. And number two, I hope next week's match between Hangman and Mox will be the send-off for Mox to finally take a vacation.
Could be.
A hot tag for you.
Amanda Savage. Hey, lovely to have you in the chat. Went to Dynamite and it was amazing. The set makes every entrance feel massive. Massive it is. And special. Seeing Jade Cargill in person is actually unreal. She looks like a living action figure. Bryan Danielson seemed full of joy. Such a good night.
Everyone's got that riz.
BMY House 76. I've got a bone to pick with you, Luke. The prequel trilogy has its flaws, but they... But they added so much lore and have way better music when compared to the original trilogy. It also gave us the Clone War TV series, which is arguably the best Star Wars content ever. One more thing about the prequels. I grew up in it, yes, but it doesn't mean I'm blinded by nostalgia. I grew up on the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, but I prefer the Andrew Garfield ones. Episode 3 is a meh movie. Episode 3 is a meh movie, but the best Star Wars movie.
What?
So, from what I can gather... Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, is the most okay movie, and by that it makes it the best of the Star Wars movies.
I don't even know what BM's trying to argue here. And your sort of argue point to say, oh, but look at me. I grew up on the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, but the Andrew Garfield ones are my favorite. I don't think helps your case.
Because those movies are quite bad.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the problem with the prequel trilogy is it's always going to have the Attack of the Clones.
Hmm.
And, you know, like any argument you can give, because, I mean, you're right. I think Duel of the Fates is probably the best Star Wars music ever. But the prequel trilogy has Attack of the Clones, so all arguments are automatically invalid. And lastly for here, Various says, not all related to AEW, but anyone who says Ospreay is a bad seller and that he doesn't understand psychology is a big doofus idiot loser.
Who's saying he's a bad seller?
A lot of people say he's a...
Who?
Like, you know the types of people who would just say he does is flips. He doesn't... Okay. The same people that say the Bucks don't know how to sell or work ring psychology. Kenny Omega doesn't know how to work. The same people are the ones who say Will Ospreay just does flips.
Well, he can, in my opinion. And you know what? I might send him a voice note. Because I have Will Ospreay's number. I'm a cool guy. Right, thank you very much for joining us here for this first AEW Dynamite review of 2023. Is 2023 going to be more mad than 2022? Maybe. So you better subscribe. You better press the thumbs up button, leave us a comment down below. Go check us out on Patreon as well, because we've got loads of exclusive podcasts over there. But for now, I've been Ollie Davis. This has been Luke Owen. DAD, jam that jam.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.